Go talk to the geniuses that are online.
Time to Belichick your premises. I'm your host, Justin M. Lesneski, on this journey into the X's and O's of rational sports talk. And joining me, as always, the man I converted into a football fan and, of course, a Patriots fan, Daniel T. Richards.
There's really no other team you can like and be a rational human being.
Wait, I see what you did there.
Yes, indeed. I remember that very first Patriots game that we purposely sat down to watch in a Hooters in Clemson. Now, I had just the season before come over to your house to watch the Super Bowl, where the Patriots lost to the Giants in stunning fashion, except that I watched none of that game because I was there to pursue a woman. So the first game we sat down to watch then was the game... The first game of the next season, where 3 minutes in, Tom Brady gets his knee blown out. So that's my first experience with football for all of you new Belichick Your Premises listeners. And I was hooked from that point on because the story of it all, the drama of it all, and the Belichickiness of it all just pulled me in and never let me go. And then Tom Brady came back and I was like, holy crap.
Yeah, I think we've told that story before about how you had like the two worst first games. And I didn't even really think about that before. I suppose you get extra credit because you became a Patriots fan in a season without Tom Brady, which is rare to do over the past 2 decades.
Yeah, just the one, right?
Exactly. And also, I never realized how beta the beginning of that story is. Rather than watch the Super Bowl, you were focused on a woman. Usually during the Super Bowl, that's the one time where we can be like, shut up. We're not going to watch the commercials. Shut up, Julie. No one cares about the dancing baby, Julie.
I was not there for anyone named Julie. I want to be clear. Also, I would argue more alpha to forego sport for female. But I don't know.
That's a debate. That's another time. We can have the debate for another time. But what I want to talk to you about first is some Patriots stuff, because it proves there is still a need for us, because we here in Belichick Your Premises, we are the antidote to the narrative driven sports media. I don't want to say fake news because I don't want to be linked with a certain president, but Deflategate was the first fake news, right? I think we covered that on our main show, Welcome to the Midside. And they continue to try and do it, and they're doing it again. Did you see the Tom Brady stuff literally today?
Tom Brady hangs up on a radio host, right? That was the headline everywhere?
Right. It's his weekly. He does a weekly radio interview with WEEI in Boston every Monday morning. And sometimes when they annoy him, he hangs up. Because he's Tom Brady. No, because he's a rational human being and he doesn't want to deal with stuff that he knows is irrational.
What?
Last season we had the whole thing with the Alex Guerrero thing. Remember? You're going to hang up this call?
Alex Guerrero or Guerrero would be a great name for a Mexican restaurant.
Yeah, just right up there with Eddie Guerrero, which is another reference you don't get. But so Alex Guerrero, for the uninitiated, which how are you listening to the show called Belichick Your Premises if you don't know who Alex Guerrero is? He's Tom Brady's trainer who co-founded the TB12 Center with him. And the media tried to create this narrative last year that there was division among the big three of the Patriots. There was division among Kraft, Brady, and Belichick because of Guerrero and Garoppolo. I guess they just don't like people whose names end with O. Like, who else do they not like?
Racism. Steve-O.
Steve-O, yeah, they really hate the Jackass movie, but that could be for other reasons. So they tried to create this narrative, which ultimately, I mean, it proved shit, right? I mean, they lost in the Super Bowl, but they got to the Super Bowl, and they certainly didn't lose because of Tom Brady or Bill Belichick. I don't want to hear the Malcolm Butler discussions. But the media is trying to bring this up again. So I'm going to read from a Pro Football Talk article here, NBC. This is why Brady hung up. This is the narrative of him hanging up. When Brady was asked about Guerrero being on the team's plane last week, he only gave a brief answer. "He was with me this last week," Brady said. Now stop. Daniel, can you translate that for us?
He-o was on-o a plane-o with me-o last week-o.
No, but it doesn't it say I don't want that? Basically saying that is like, I'm not going to say anything else.
It essentially just means, can we move on, please? I'm Tom Brady, and you want to talk about this?
But could we move on, Daniel?
No, of course we can't move on. We're the media. We can't move on. We have to follow our narratives down a path of darkness and death and despair.
Ask why Guerrero was allowed with the team last week when he hadn't been allowed to fly with the team last season, which we don't even know if that's true, by the way. Mm-hmm. Brady answered, "I'm not getting into all that." Ask the follow-up, Brady said, "I said I don't want to get into it." So, Dan, what do you think the media did next?
Oh, they moved on and asked some relevant questions.
When Brady got one more question about whether Guerrero was on the sideline, he answered, "Yeah, all right, guys, have a great day. I'll talk to you later," and then hung up.
Three strikes, you're out. Wrong sport, but I like the spirit.
That's four strikes. The four questions he had.
I can't count, but yeah.
So, Daniel, rational response from Tom Brady or not?
Of course it's a rational response from Tom Brady. The guy basically signals to you, "Hey, I don't want to do this," and then he outright tells you, "I don't want to do this," and then you keep asking. You have the greatest quarterback of all time on your radio show, and you want to focus on Alex Guerrero? That's what you want to ask Tom Brady. Tom, come on this show. I guarantee we will ask smarter questions. We will stimulate your mind and entertain you as well. And we don't care about any of the fake narrative stuff.
Right. The only Guerrero we care about on this show is Eddie Guerrero.
I just want to make Daniel get 4 minutes later.
I just want to make Daniel Google Eddie Guerrero after the show. But no, I mean, I agree with you completely. Completely rational, right? Especially you have him on once a week. He could go to another radio show in the Boston market, and you're doing your best to alienate him. But
yeah, ridiculous. They're
not the only people. I want to read you a tweet by a blue check mark here. This is a guy who was brought in by Bill Simmons. We all know who Bill Simmons is. At Ryan Russillo, Brady hanging up on that interview after a few non-confrontational and fair questions is an example of an athlete that has been challenged so rarely in his career. He doesn't know what tough questions really are.
Tom Brady challenged so rarely in his career. Does anyone bother to, I don't know, Google anything before they tweet? Just like a cursory, like, "Has Tom Brady faced tough questions? Enter." I don't know. It seems ridiculous.
Deflate gate. I mean, ignoring everything he went through to never be a starter until Drew Bledsoe almost died. Deflate gate. But the point here is, I have never seen a more obvious example of gaslighting in my entire life.
Oh, and it doesn't even have to do with a woman.
This is a woman move. He's painting himself as non-confrontational and fair. This is like a woman who starts a fight with you and goes, "I don't know why you're fighting with me, but you just insulted me and started a fight."
What's the Bill Burr example where he doesn't want to talk about something, and he's trying to stay calm, and his girlfriend keeps escalating. So finally he shouts at her, "Fine, you want to have this fight? Let's have this fight right now." And she goes, "We'll talk later when you calm down."
Yeah. That's a great one. And Dane Cook actually has a good one too, where he's like, women will like incept your mind. They'll like leave little comments in the middle of a fight that will then come to fruition later, and you'll realize they did it just to fuck with you. The example he uses is like, they'll say something about your dad, and in the moment in time, you won't realize it because it'll be like, you're just like your dad. You're acting just like your dad. And you'll just ignore it. And then later you'll think about it and you won't be angry anymore. And you'll just be sitting there by yourself and you'll go, wait a second, my father was a great man.
That is a good one. So, yeah, yes, you were saying total chick move.
Yeah, it's a total chick move. Oh, a few non-confrontational and fair questions. Oh, and by the way, you've never faced adversity in your life. Oh, you're the bad guy here. I'm not the bad guy. Why do we put up with this stuff? Why do we let them? Why do we listen to them? And why do we not all listen to Belichick Your Premises, Daniel?
I don't know. I've always wondered that. You people out there listening right now, you need to tell more friends. That's really what it comes down to. I think it's your fault. I blame you, the audience. Good podcast tactic. Blame the audience for the non-success of the show.
The irony is we've already become the people we've hate. We just complained about them blaming everyone else, and now we're blaming everyone else.
Oh, how quickly the tables turn.
And speaking of how quickly the tables turn, is this the year the tables finally turn on the Patriots and they don't go to the AFC Championship game and they don't contend for the Super Bowl?
Okay. Here's the thing. So we're in preseason, right? And preseason is both football methadone, but also 4 weeks of essentially teams lying to you. Just outright, blatantly lying to you about what they're going to look like in the regular season. I think the greatest example of this is, and I haven't looked this up recently, but I think I did last season, is the year the Patriots went 16-0, they lost all four of their preseason games. It's a big lie. It's a big lie. So, whether or not this is the year the Patriots don't go to the AFC Championship game, the question one has to ask, and so I'll ask you, is who wins the AFC East this year if not the Patriots? Who actually has the talent to win that division, or would it be one at like 7-9?
Well, that's the problem, is there is no other team that is going to be able to beat the Patriots because they do not have a quarterback. Name one other quarterback in the AFC East.
Danny Amendola. Oh, wait.
He's on the Dolphins. That is correct. He is in the AFC East. So you named another player in the AFC East.
The Dolphins have a quarterback this year, right?
Yeah, it's
not just a guy who's smoking on the sideline who looks like an AIDS patient.
You mean Jay Cutler? No. It's Ryan Tannehill.
Oh, him. That's right. He still plays the game. Kind of. Quote unquote, plays.
Now, name the Bills and the Jets quarterback.
The Bills quarterback is the guy with the big nose. Isn't that the guy they drafted? Big nose quarterback guy? Rosen? Is it, yes. Rosen? No. Is it?
Is Rosen a Jewish last name and you just made fun of his his big nose? You're racist?
Did not make that connection at all. God, I'm so racist. Okay. And then Jets is it also a rookie? Is it someone they drafted? Is it Sam Darnold?
Yeah, it's not Sam Darnold. Sam Darnold was drafted, I believe, by... Oh, am I wrong? I might be wrong. I think it might be Sam Darnold, yeah. I was confusing him with who did the Steelers draft? Yes, it is Sam Darnold. They also have Teddy Bridgewater on that team.
Drafted Maya Rudolph. If my memory serves, I'm pretty sure it does.
Yeah, they did.
Of a steel trap.
For the Steelers, yeah. They did draft Rudolph. So, yeah, I mean, Darnold's getting hype. They do have Bridgewater and McCown on the bench. So I think the Jets actually might be better than people expect. They might actually be the number two team. But, you know, then again, the Bills have a good defense. But the point is, none of these teams are going to have the consistency of the Patriots throughout the season. But then the question becomes, can the Patriots survive the divisional round? And the reason I ask that is, we've got the Steelers, who are a good team. We've got the Titans, who are a good team and got their defense to be even better. We've got the Texans, who, if Watson can come back and play well off of his injury, can be good if he continues, you know, to not throw his stupid interceptions like he did in college. And then we have the Jaguars, who have a great defense and gave the Patriots a hell of a game in the AFC Championship game. So that's four other teams that are good. So, yeah, one of them is going to be in the wild card round, or one of them is going to be knocked out in the wild card round, or, you know, maybe not make the playoffs because of they all have to play each other. But I would expect to see those four teams in the playoffs, and I think any four of them, especially if Brady drops off due to his age, could beat the Patriots in the divisional round.
It is certainly possible, and is in fact statistically likely. Oh, you like that? Only because it's just not statistically likely that the Patriots make it back to the AFC Championship game and the Super Bowl every single year. It's not. Even if they have the single highest percent chance of any team, that's, what, statistically something like 17% or 16%? So statistically speaking, they won't. Because some other team will. So just having some real talk here. But if they make it to the playoffs, we talked about this last year, there's something to be said about the experience of having people who've done it over and over again, who have reps in the playoff high-pressure situation, that makes the Patriots a favorite, if not statistically likely. So I think if they make it that far, barring any horrific injuries, they've got a good shot. And I don't see why they can't make it that far.
Right, I agree. I mean, that's the biggest thing in their favor is Brady and Belichick know how to handle it. They've been in those situations before.
I think one of the most underrated elements in football, at least as a sport, is consistency. Having this consistency, not just players around each other, but system, team, ideology, expectations, etc. Consistency of mind and body that creates long-term dynastic champions. So,
yeah, I mean, that's why the Steelers have been good for so long. It's just sort of unfortunate for Ben Roethlisberger that he's around in a time when Tom Brady and Bill Belichick are there and they have the Steelers' number. I think it's mainly because of Mike Tomlin. I think Mike Tomlin puts his teams in a position to lose to the Patriots. But that's why, for me, the teams I find most terrifying are actually the Titans and the Texans. Those are the two teams I would be most afraid of in the playoffs.
Interesting. Certainly Texans are on my list. I don't know about the Titans. They're, again, a team that shows well, but then kind of fumbles at the goal line sometimes, literally.
They come up a yard short in the Super Bowl.
Although sometimes their quarterback throws a touchdown pass to himself. So there is
that. How can you not be afraid of that?
I know. He's his own best wide receiver. Maybe Tom Brady should learn from him this year.
Now, I didn't want to talk about this, but I think people are overreacting. They got Edelman's going to come back after 4 weeks. You got Chris Hogan. You got Philip Dorsett, who's got 2 years in the system. You got Cordarrelle Patterson, who looks great and is super fast. And then don't forget, Gronk's basically a wide receiver. James White is basically a wide receiver. I think people are overreacting to the Patriots cutting all of these wide receivers and wide receivers getting hurt.
Yeah, I mean, I guess. Tom has thrown to a group of lesser men.
He has. He got all the way to the AFC Championship game with Rashay Caldwell as his lead wide receiver.
That's right.
But before we move on to the NFC, and I ask you what you think of them, I think we have to at least acknowledge the AFC West. And the two questions there are, first of all, how good are the Chiefs going to be, especially with Alex? No, it's not Alex Smith anymore. Is it Patrick Mahomes? So how good are they going to be with him as the quarterback? And then also the Broncos. That's who I was thinking of. The Broncos got Chase Daniels. Is that who they got? No.
I don't know. I don't follow the Broncos other than I saw a story where Broncos fans started a GoFundMe to buy out Trevor Siemian's contract, which I thought was hilarious.
Case Keenum is who I was thinking of.
Oh, the guy, the backup from the Vikings last year.
Right.
Who did Gangbusters. Right. Now, it'll be interesting to see if he had a fluke one-off season, or if he's a renewed man and he's going to be a viable quarterback. Interesting
right.
story.
Right. So, again, all of this is very dependent on the quarterbacks. And I think in the AFC West, we have two teams that could be dangerous because Von Miller and that defense is still there in Denver. And the Kansas City defense is good as well. It just depends on how the quarterbacks do this year. So I don't want people out there to be like, what about the AFC West? I just ignore them because I hate them. Okay.
My sleeper team of the year is in the AFC West.
If you say the Chargers, Raiders. I'm going to punch you in the
Chargers.
Oh, my God.
Every year, the Chargers have talent out the wazoo who all fall over and break their ankles or something. They are just riddled with injury all the time. Now, staying healthy is an aspect of the game. But I think that the Chargers have statistically faced more major injuries than any other team and more major injuries than any team should statistically expect to face. So if that problem goes away, I think they will be contenders. I don't think they'll win it all, but I think they'll be a sneakily good team.
You cannot win with Philip Rivers as your quarterback. He's too dumb.
But at this point, he has enough children to field his own team. Should there be enough injuries. And an all-Rivers team, I think, might do it.
Maybe because they all think the same way, it'll actually work out.
That's right.
Okay, so the NFC.
Mm.
What do you think about the NFC? Who you got?
Well, Green Bay is always frightening because Aaron Rodgers is good if they ever get that, you know, figured out over there. I don't know. I'll pounce it over to you. What do you think? Do you think the Eagles are going to repeat their greatness?
The Eagles are interesting because you have Doug Peterson, who's proven to be a great coach. Mm-hmm. But then there's like a weird sort of quarterback controversy brewing there, which you don't know how that's going to affect the locker room. And also those players are making, it seems like, the Seahawks mistake. Well, if you remember after the first Seahawks Super Bowl, they thought they were going to be a dynasty. And we saw what happened to them. We put an end to that quickly. Now they did beat us, which the Seahawks couldn't do. They beat us in the Super Bowl. But if there's anything we've learned, last season is last season. That's one thing Belichick has taught us. Last season is last season, and it doesn't seem like the Eagles have turned the page yet. So I don't know if they're going to be able to turn the page mentally and be able to win again. And I never understood how they got there. I am of the belief that the AFC is better than the NFC. I know it's very fashionable to say the NFC is better.
No.
But the AFC continues to win the Super Bowl most of the time. So it always seems like there's a team that comes out of nowhere and wins in the NFC, right? 2 years ago, it was the Falcons. And I was saying for years the Falcons were a loaded team, and I think they're a loaded team again. So I don't know if the Eagles are going to be able to put that together. And it's always seems to be a surprise. So I don't really know about the NFC. I mean, what about the Redskins? Weren't they pretty decent? They just had a shitty quarterback, and now they have Alex Smith.
So they have an average quarterback. So that's an upgrade. That's an upgrade. Now, Alex Smith is good. The Redskins suffer from horrible coaching. Just horrible coaching. Gruden is an unbelievably terrible mastermind, if that is a word that could even apply to such a man. So I don't know. That's potential. The Rams were actually good last year, even though they're helmed by Jared Goff, which is weird.
Well, he's young, and he could do well this season, and it's important. If the Eagles are in win-now mode, and they have to be because most teams don't take pay cuts. After they win the Super Bowl, a team has a small window because then everybody wants to get paid and the team falls apart. That's the other thing that happened to the Seahawks. So if the Eagles are in win-now mode, so are the Rams with the amount of money they've spent on players and the amount of trades they made. I mean, the Patriots traded Brandon Cooks to them.
Yep. Yep.
And
yep,
then there's, when we're talking about quarterbacks, there's the question about the 49ers and how far can Jimmy Garoppolo bring them? Was that just an anomaly last season?
Undefeated Jimmy. Jimmy G.
That's unbelievable. And then the Saints, can we ever count out Drew Brees?
Nope. He could just have one of those seasons where he goes off and is a perfect passer, and he's damn near impossible to beat. He's frightening. Some teams I think that are going to go downhill this year and be even worse than they were last year, the Seahawks. Russell Wilson is the best player on the Seahawks. I think if you combine the talent of all of the other players on the team, they would not reach the talent of Russell Wilson. Last year, wasn't it? I don't know the exact number, but he was responsible for something like 48 of their 50 touchdowns or something last year. That's an insane amount to put on one human being. They're going nowhere. I think the Vikings are going downhill this year. They made a lot of bad trades, in my opinion. The Arizona Cardinals lost their quarterback, they're probably going downhill this year. The perennial question, Justin, outside of the Patriots, to me, if they're going to be good or bad, is will the Lions ever be good?
That's the perennial question, not will the Browns win a game?
I have no concern over the Browns. Hugh Jackson's a joke. Will the Lions be good? I think it's good for football for the Lions to be good. To me, when you think football, if you had to remove your team, i.e. the Patriots, and my team, the Patriots, I think the Lions. I don't know why that is. They're like the team that is ingrained in my brain as representative of football itself.
That's weird because the big rivalry in that division is Packers-Bears, and you're from Illinois.
Yeah, I don't like either.
I think that's why. I think you're revealing your own psychology here. But the question with the Lions is how good of a head coach can Matt Patricia be? He was the former defensive coordinator for the Patriots, and now he's the head coach for the Lions. They have a very highly paid quarterback, Matthew Stafford. So it would seem like things could go well in Detroit. So maybe they're the sleeper team in the NFC this year.
Could be. Every year, I wonder.
Is this the Buccaneers' year? Because one year it was the Panthers, Then it was the...
It's not. I'm sorry. We can move on. Isn't Winston, suspended for 4 games to start the season?
I believe so. I mean, he either raped an Uber driver or said something about crab legs or something. Or maybe he said something about crab legs to an Uber driver. I can't keep up with what Jameis Winston did in...
That can't be it. I think I'm mixing up some story.
Okay, so it's going to be an interesting year this year. The NFC is always unpredictable. We've got some good storylines over there that I'm watching from a football perspective. I think we talked about all those. The AFC has some good storylines. I think the main storyline in the AFC is this the year that the youth finally takes over and Brady goes away and other teams get a chance? But overall, I think we got some good storylines. What do you think, Daniel?
Indeed, and speaking of storylines, one thing I'd like to talk to you about this season in an ongoing manner is something I've been thinking a lot about lately, which is the similarities and differences between art and sport. And obviously, this is a football podcast, so art and football. I've been thinking about this lately because I made... what may be a realization or it may be a misintegration, and maybe you can help me think through it, which is, the human being is both mind and body, and there should never be a split between them. They're one unified thing, a mind and body. And it occurred to me that art is sort of what you come up with abstractly if you're trying to integrate mind and body, but you're going to emphasize mind. But sport is what you come up with if you take the gestalt of that, and you're going to integrate mind and body, but you emphasize body. And I just had that notion, and it occurred to me that there are more similarities between art and sport that we could talk about, not the least of which is one that we have talked about on the show multiple times, which is the concretization of human greatness, like showing us what is possible in the world. I think that's one of the most profound similarities between art and sport, but there are actually a whole bunch of them. Any preliminary thoughts on that?
Yeah, what the hell is Gestalt?
Gestalt was a psychologist, I think, but I know the phrase from foreground background differentiation. So like if you put a black dot on a page, you can see it as a black dot or a white square with a hole cut out in the middle, depending on sort of what your emphasis is.
So you're talking about like that visual trick. What's like an optical illusion where you can either see it as two vases or two women's faces?
Yeah, something like that. It's whatever sort of gestalt perception shift you're doing. And all I'm saying is, if you're trying to create a medium where you're integrating mind and body, but you emphasize mind, I think that's what art is. But if you emphasize body, I think that's what sport is.
I think you're on to something. I think it's something we're going to have to talk about more throughout the season. My immediate reaction is both of them.
Shut up.
No, not at all. I mean, it was like, I think you were talking a bit too intellectual. You were like, oh, gestalt and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, it's a touchdown.
Sorry, I use smart people words.
You see, when the guy catches the ball in the end zone, it's a touchdown. Remember, that's our audience here, Daniel. Sorry, audience. John, I'm just kidding. We've shit on our audience twice this episode.
It's a recurring theme here on Belichick Your Premises.
No, my immediate thought is both of them are different ways to concretize and show how values are have efficacy in reality. Mm-hmm. But one is fictionalized and one is not. Mm-hmm. Although then we get into the whole, is photography art? Because that's not fictional, but it is sort of fictional because of how you're controlling the frame. But then again, this is where we get into our show, where how people control the frame of how we watch it, right? We talked about that tweet earlier, which was trying to control the frame to the point that it was gaslighting Tom Brady and gaslighting us by trying to convince us that Tom Brady actually didn't have efficacy in reality, that he was evading reality. Whereas Tom Brady has shown us by his success that he does not evade reality at all, and this guy's evading reality. So there's a whole conversation about that as well. But I think it's about the demonstration of how the mind manifests in action and the way those two work together and showing that. That's my immediate reaction. And my second thing is, there is a beauty in sports that is comparable to a beauty that is in art. And what I mean by that is the picture of Hunter Renfrow catching the game-winning touchdown from Deshaun Watson 2 years ago in the college football championship is beautiful. The way it's framed, the way he's catching the ball, the way you know all the context of it, that is a beautiful picture. It is a beautiful play to watch. And sports has that same level of beauty that I don't think is appreciated because we try to say it's simpler than that, and it's not that simple. We try to dumb it down because we think we have a disrespect for the body.
Yes. The body is just material. It's just purely atoms moving around, and thus it's not worth as much as the mind, and I think that's a mistake to make. I'm not the first person to make this comparison, but if we were going to compare sport to a kind of art, it would almost be ballet-esque. And I think some people have even taken dance as a way to prepare for football. So,
well, or conversely, how many football stars do well on Dancing with the Stars?
Absolutely. Absolutely. At least none that I know of, but I'm sure there are some because I don't watch the show.
There's a lot that do well. That's what I was referring to. But it's, you know, it's like ballet, except it's not for pussies.
How dare you? How dare you? Well, fascinating stuff, Justin. I think we'll delve into this a little more week by week, unless the audience tweets us and go, shut up, talk about Tom Brady some more, which I'd be happy to do too, but.
Yeah, and I definitely want to talk about it some more because I think that understanding this will help people understand the importance of respecting the body by using the mind to help the body in the same way that people think if they just have a mind, it doesn't matter what their body is like. some people think if they have a body, it doesn't matter what their mind is like. And I think having this discussion can help people see how both matter and how both will help you be successful in life.
Indeed. All right.
Thanks for checking in with us this week. I'm going to take that again, Daniel, I think, and we're just going to leave this in. But because I forgot my outro, actually. Is it thanks for checking your premises or thanks for checking in with this week?
I don't know. Thanks for Bella checking your premises this week, you could say. Throw the show title in there.
I think it's thanks for checking in with us. But you can find, actually, here's a better one. Let's do a plug here. If you liked what you heard here, check out our main show, Welcome to the Midside. You can find it at themidside.com/podcast or anywhere podcasts are streaming. That's where we take a more general approach to what we talk about with culture and art, actually. So if you liked our art discussion, head on over there. Thanks for checking in with us this week. I'm your host, Justin Emleszewski. And for now, we're on to the Houston Texans.
My face, your face, instant face. Go talk to whoever you want that does that stuff.